What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the program. It is episode 413 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. Great to be back with you folks this week. Obviously, got a lot to get to today. There's all kinds of Red Sox things as well with the big trade that happened yesterday. So, clearly we got a lot to get to there. Obviously, a lot of off-season updates as well from a couple teams, Patriots, Bruins, and Celtics. We got some Revolution as well as they were back to playing this weekend. So great to be back this week on this Monday morning. We got had a great guest Friday last week. Chris Burns and Sam Brown came back to talk some PLL. So that was great to be able to have them both back on the program. So if you have not listened to that, you can go ahead and listen as the PLL just finished their third week of the season or third weekend of the season over the weekend. So actually, we'll take a look at some of the games that took place this past weekend. But as always, you can go listen to the old Guest Friday. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. So I think, clearly, it's going to be an interesting program to talk about the Red Sox because that's where we're starting today. And of course, it felt like I think I kind of just want to rehash about kind of what a great weekend the Red Sox just had in terms of what it felt like a return to. I don't want to say normalcy, but it was like they returned to kind of the team that I think we all expect them to be at the start of the season, with a team that, we felt like was ready to compete with the American League East and ready to compete with the Yankees. And, I think for obvious reasons, things didn't exactly, come together the way the Red Sox would have liked. I think dealing with some injuries and, ineffective pitching and, just kind of poor play. And I feel like the Red Sox really started to hit their stride this weekend, playing in these kind of low scoring, high intensity kind of games against the Yankees. And it's funny because it seems like the last two seasons in particular, the Yankees have kind of brought out the best in the Red Sox. That they seem to play better against the Yankees than they do against other teams. And, clearly the pitching was great. Aaron Judge struck out nine times in this series. The pitching was great. The starting pitching of Crochet, Dobbins, and Bayo, all outstanding. And, gave the Red Sox a chance to win all three games, which they did. The bullpen came up huge. He had some big hits. Trevor Story continues to really improve in this month of June. I think he's been one of the best hitters in baseball the month of June and really has stabilized a lineup that kind of seemed to be all over the place. And, it's, and obviously we'll talk about this later, but you now have this influx of the young talent. Roman Anthony is now up. Thank goodness, the Red Sox finally listened to this program, and cut and called him up. And it just seemed like there was all kinds of just positive vibes for this team this weekend that the starting pitching pitched the way that we expect. They got big timely hits when they needed it and swept a team that they've been, I think playing well against. Obviously this season they've won five out of six against the Yankees and I think I can't remember what their record was last season against the Yankees, but I seem to remember that they played pretty well against them. So, obviously, you had all these positive things and the crowd outstanding this weekend. I think you could tell that they're really starting to get behind this team. And I think anytime the Yankees are in town, it kind of just kicks everything up a notch. And so I felt like the play on the field was awesome. It was great to see them play really good, solid baseball in a three-game series, really for what it felt like the whole season, that they've not been able to play this well in a three-game series against a really good quality opponent. So I think it's important for us to acknowledge kind of where this team is at in terms of, how they played this weekend, how they were able to take two out of three from Tampa Bay. I think just seeming like a team that's pulling itself together at the right that the that the at a critical time, and I think even you're getting to see maybe some guys that are going to return quickly from time on the injured list. Bregman, I think, is working his way back. Tanner Houck, I think, is going to start a rehab assignment this week. And, Willy Abreu, obviously, I think, will be coming back sometime soon. So I think there's good positive things you can feel about this particular team based on, this weekend. Then, of course, I think we all were shocked with the news about the trade, yesterday, hours after the game, that the Red Sox dealt Rafael Devers to the Giants for a couple of pitchers, couple prospects. And I think kind of a lot of us, including myself, felt like the positive vibes had just been sucked out of the room. That, here you go, seeing this team play at a really high level against a good opponent, and then it kind of just seemed like it all kind of came crashing down. And I feel like, unfortunately, this is something that I think we're understanding that kind of was something that was going to happen at some point. And I guess in a certain respect, I think we can't be surprised that this happened. Obviously, I was very surprised. A lot of people were, and I think no one can sit here and say that they were expecting that, he was actually going to get traded. But I think when you think about kind of just the discourse and kind of the frosty relationship that it seems like Devers in the front office had, like it kind of seemed like it was trending toward this, that the moment that there was issues with him having to move back to DH, and then the first base thing, I think, kind of just sealed his fate. Now, I think, as we kind of talked about in spring training in the early part of the season, both parties, Devers and the front office, both, I think, for me, are equally at fault here. That it's like this situation got completely out of hand because I think, if you go back to this offseason, I think the Red Sox could have been more, should have been more upfront with Devers about, hey, this is what we're looking at to improve the team. We're looking to sign somebody to play third base. And I think they could have been more upfront and been honest with him and said, this is what we're going to do. So we want you to start, getting used to the idea of being a DH, and instead they wait till spring training to come up with this. And I think it just from there it all blew up in their face. And I feel like if you had been more willing to have that conversation with him earlier, this probably wouldn't have happened. Get him used to the idea of being a DH and then maybe even try to see if he would take grounders at first base. Just to kind of prepare him for that potential eventuality that, okay, we might need you to take a look at playing in a position in the field just to take grounders. And I think they didn't do that. And I think, he was pretty, unwilling to do the DH thing. Obviously they got him to do it, but then it's like the injury to Casas happens, and it's kind of like, why go to him then to play first base? It's like, you feel like they could have, put the idea of switching positions in his head much earlier in the off season, so that you don't come to spring training and it's like, oh, okay, we're gonna do this. And it just seemed like they couldn't get out in front of it, in terms of, they should have gotten out in front of it, I think, is kind of my point. And so I feel like that's kind of where the front office came up short. And this is where they're at fault for this, where it's like they should have approached him sooner about playing a different position. But I also think Devers is at fault here because at the end of the day, you should do what is best for the team and what is, best to have your team be successful. And he just straight up refused on, multiple occasions. And I just feel like that's not really okay, to be perfectly honest. And I feel like that's kind of where this stems from, where, he's ultimately your highest paid player, your kind of most important player, and he's refusing to do what is necessary to help the team. And it's kind of just like, at a certain point, the front office and the team has to make the decision about what's best for the team. And look, is trading him, I don't think the idea of trading him is that crazy. I think given his just refusal to do what's best for the team, because let's be honest here, if he was willing to play first base, the Red Sox would be able to keep, all those outfielders together and on the team. Roman Anthony could DH, and the Red Sox could keep all those guys on the team and on the roster at the same time. And I feel like, yes, okay, the other solution is then, yes, you just trade him, which is what they did. I feel like the idea of trading him again, I don't think is crazy, because I think at the end of the day, if you have a guy that's refusing to do what's best for the team, there's kind of not much that you can do. But I think the problem is like, that return that they got is not nearly good enough. It's really not even close. And it's like, you got some pitching depth, which of course you needed, but it's kind of like, it's Rafael Devers. He's one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. And you can't get a better return. It just kind of blows my mind. And it's like, it almost tells me that the Red Sox were willing to accept any return to get rid of him, which kind of sucks, to be honest, where it's like they kind of were just wanting to get rid of him. So, I think could easily spend the entire program talking about, what went wrong and this and that. But I think at the end of the day, it's like, okay, this is a move that they made. This is a bet that the front office has made. They now have to deal with it. And they have to deal with the negative reaction that's going to come from fans. They are going to have to deal with, really hoping that this trade doesn't affect the team negatively. They're going to have to hope that chemistry-wise, the Red Sox will be fine and will be able to, deal with this like professionals and go back out and keep playing the way that they've been playing. But it's just like, it is one hell of a gamble that the front office is making here. I think it's, again, the idea of the trade, I don't think is that crazy, given some of these issues that Devers had with the front office and kind of just not listening to what the team feels was best for the team. So it's like that part of it, I kind of understand, but it's like, man, like you needed to get a better return, and you are really putting a lot of pressure on, the young rookies that you have on this team right now. That, okay, like you're now counting on Meyer and Anthony to be exactly what you think they can be, which I still think they can be great players, but it's like, holy cow, you're really forcing a lot on them right now, where it's like, you're hoping that your team is going to be okay, that you can manage losing the production of a Devers, which I think is a crazy gamble to take at this point in the season, considering you've, won 10 of your last 15. You just swept the Yankees, and it's like you're now going on this West Coast trip. And never mind the fact that you have to play Devers and the Giants this weekend. So it's kind of like, okay, like you want to take this gamble, fine, but it's like it better work out. This team better make the playoffs. I just feel like Of course, we're not really going to know how this trade, works out in the long run. But I think if it doesn't, there's going to be, I don't know how the front office can expect to, be able to kind of gain or have the fans' trust, which I feel like that's important. I feel like you think about the trade for Mookie Betts a couple of years ago. Now, people are going to compare the trades. I don't really think they have too much in common, other than obviously they're two guys that did a lot of great things here. But I think it's two kind of different situations. But it's like, I think for a lot of fans, it really doesn't matter. And it's like now they're looking at this like, okay, you have now traded two franchise cornerstones in the span of a couple of years. And it's like, I think that given this weekend series, a lot of fans were starting to get excited about this team again. And you drop this bomb on them. It's like, I don't know how you expect the reaction to be measured and positive. But I also think if the Red Sox do continue to play really, really well, they, get into a playoff position, which they're half game out of a wild card right now. Like if they continue to play well, turn things around, make the playoffs, make a run, then I think people can stomach this a little bit better. But it's like that's, that's quite a leap of faith to think like, okay, maybe we'll be fine. And it's like, they might be. We don't know. It's possible that, this whole situation was a distraction for some of the guys in that clubhouse. Maybe there were guys in that clubhouse that didn't appreciate Devers not doing what was best for the team. That's pure speculation, of course. But I think it's like, if they're making this move and they think that, okay, team chemistry is going to be fine, then it's like, okay, if you think you can make that move, then all the power to you. But this better work. It's just, this is a situation that, it better work. And I feel like if it doesn't, it's going to be a really hard sell for this front office to like sell, to fans that they're serious about winning, because this move certainly doesn't. You think about trading a guy like Devers and getting that kind of return, it doesn't scream to me that, oh, okay, like we are going to do everything we can to put this team in great position to win. Because it kind of seems like they made this trade because, okay, this guy is not going to listen to what we want to do. We're just going to get rid of him for nothing, basically. And I feel like this is the type of return that you get for a player that you kind of just want to get out of town. And you really don't care if you get, equal or good enough value, which is scary, which is really scary because that means that they're taking a huge gamble with this trade. So it's just with Breslow and that front office, they better know what they're doing. And I think you could argue that maybe they don't know and they're just, doing what they feel is the only thing they can do, So it's kind of disappointing. It's confusing that I think how this whole situation ended with the Red Sox kind of being unwilling to be honest with a player. And then the player is, kind of rightfully upset for a period of time. But then it's also like, it kind of comes back around to Devers and his refusal to do what's best for the team. And to be perfectly honest, like, you can't really have guys like that on your team. And I think that's kind of the logic that the front office arrived at, that, okay, we can't continue to have this guy on the team. So it's just, again, I think this is a trade that I don't know if it's gonna immediately, like, you're not gonna really know who wins this trade for a long time. It's kind of just gonna be okay. Like, What do the Red Sox do now to try to replace that kind of production? I think that that's what you're going to see at the trade deadline, because the Red Sox did free up a lot of money here, with moving this contract. So, I don't know. Maybe the hope is they try to do something major at the deadline. They try to improve this team as best they can, but I feel like this team got worse with this trade, and I'm not sure what's going to happen next, but this West Coast trip is going to be fascinating. Starts tonight in Seattle, three games, off day, three games in San Francisco to play Devers and the Giants. Then you got the Angels. So, it's going to be very telling. And I think with this team performing the way it has, what does this West Coast trip show you? Can this team win 6 out of 9? Can they continue to play the good baseball they've been playing, getting the solid starting pitching, the timely hitting, the good, reliable, bullpen? Can they do that, or does it nosedive the other way? Is this just a flash in the pan? Is this the highest that they're going to get? And they come crashing down because of this, Devers trade. So, it's a serious gamble the front office is taking, that this team is not going to be, crazy affected by this trade. And I think that's kind of insane to assume, but it's like this is kind of what they're banking on. So, we'll see if it works, but I think like it's just kind of wild timing to make this trade at this point when you were playing really good baseball. And it just seems that, I don't know, it just seems strange that they're making this trade now, not closer to the trade deadline, when undoubtedly you could get a lot more, but maybe the return isn't what mattered. I know that sounds crazy, but that's kind of what it seems like, that this front office kind of settled for a, less than stellar return because they just wanted to do anything they could to get Devers off the team. So I kind of at a loss, try to make sense of it as best I can. But it's hard to, and I was looking forward to coming on this program and, selling positivity to be like, hey, this is a great time to start believing in this team, and they go off and do something like this that kind of, sucks all the air out of the room, where it's like, okay, where do they go from here? But who knows? I think the West Coast trip will be telling to see how they do. The Giants and the Mariners, two pretty good teams that they'll face. The Angels are around 500, but the Red Sox are too. It's great to see them above 500. Winning five in a row and playing really good baseball. Story's been great. Narvaez has been great. It's been really fun to watch this team perform well. But yeah, you're going to have to do it without Devers going forward, which is definitely tough to stomach. But I think, hopefully the team can bounce back from this and be okay and continue to play well. Because who knows? Maybe this turns out. Maybe this works out. Maybe the Red Sox know what they're doing. I wouldn't bank on it, to be perfectly honest, given the track record of the last couple of years, but it's possible it works. It's possible that the younger guys really start to take a big role. Bregman comes back, and you're able to continue to play the good baseball that you're playing. So I think that's probably going to do it. I still have more thoughts about, or obviously there will be more thoughts about this trade coming out from all kinds of outlets, but I do think it is important to kind of not go so far as to be kind of like overtly blaming the player, because I feel like I'm a little concerned about that the player is going to be painted in a certain way that people are going to be like, oh, glad he's gone. But it's like, Rafael did a lot of really good things here, was a fan favorite for a reason, and He's a very popular guy, and I hope that like all this stuff is kind of covered fairly, that we're not painting Raphael to be the villain. We're not painting, the front office. It's like, I think there's equal blame to go around the front office for not getting out in front of this issue. It's on Devers for not willing to be more of a team player. So I just hope that like the coverage of this is fair, that it's not too skewed one way or another. So I think that's gonna do it for the Red Sox. Gonna get into some Patriots now. Obviously, mandatory minicamp took place a couple days last week, and I think things look to be pretty solid. I think one of the things I missed last week was Jelani Tavai, one of the linebackers, had suffered an injury during, I think, one of the voluntary workouts. And so now the kind of look at the linebacker room is gonna be more reps for guys like Christian Ellis, especially, who came over toward the end of last season, I think, or started to kind of get more playing time. Jack Gibbons, who they signed from the Giants, Spillane, obviously, who they signed in the offseason. It's like those guys are going to be really important to pick up the slack if Tavai, has to miss time at any point. So I think otherwise, it was good to see the continued work from Stephon Diggs and the wide receivers. Obviously, it's a crowded room at this point, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of eyes on that position in training camp, because I think there's going to be some serious battles going on for roster spots, because really they have close to 9, 10 guys, and really I think can only carry about six. So I think you're going to be looking at some guys that are really going to have to compete hard to try to get a roster spot, because I feel like looking at this room right now, I think Diggs, Douglas, Kyle Williams are locks. I would say Mac Hollins probably is too. That's four guys right there. And you have Bourne, you have Polk, you have Booty, you have Javon Baker, you have Efton Chisholm, who has played really, really well in the offseason, in the offseason activities. And it was highlighted a couple times on some video highlights that I'd seen during some workouts. So it's like that's a lot of wide receivers and a lot of tough decisions that they're going to have to make. So I feel like that's going to be really interesting to watch in terms of training camp. The Patriots also had one of the offensive linemen that they had signed, Wes Schweitzer, who they signed a couple months ago, and so he retired, and so he's an offensive lineman. The Patriots are, now kind of looking at that left guard spot as to kind of being a, I would say, kind of an open competition between, Cole Strange, Laydon Robinson, who they drafted last year, and Tyrese Robinson, who they brought in off the waiver wire toward the end of last year. Because I think otherwise, the other spots on the line are pretty much solidified, with Moses and Will Campbell on either side, or on either tackle spot, the right tackle for Moses, left tackle for Campbell, and then Onwenu at right guard, Garrett Bradbury at center. And so I think left guard is really where you're going to be looking to kind of see some internal competition. But I think, again, hard to glean a lot from these offseason workouts, but I think it is kind of great to see that Stephon Diggs continues to look like he's moving well, after the 7.5 months after, tearing his ACL. I think the kind of off the field stuff is kind of behind him, and I feel like he's now going to come in focused and ready to go. And I think that that's going to be a good positive thing for the wide receiver room. I think with the younger guys that they have, that they can see an older kind of veteran guy set the example. So I think that's going to be really, really exciting to see. But I think going into training camp, I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the Patriots. I think that their defense is going to be much improved. You're going to see a lot better, I think, technical play, better tackling, and just higher level of play. I feel like offensively, Drake May probably takes another step forward. I think having a veteran, a seasoned veteran like Diggs is going to make a huge difference. In terms of the offense, I think the line is hopefully going to be better. I mean, that's really kind of the most important position for this team, that if this offensive line can be good and solid together and get into a good rhythm, then I think offensively they're going to be just fine. Running backs, I think. Stevenson, it'll be interesting to see if he kind of bounces back. I think he's going to need to, because I think Travion Henderson, the Patriots really like him. And I feel like you also think about, Gibson's on this roster. They also have Lan Larison, who I think they really like as an undrafted rookie. And I feel like if Ramondre is not, on his A game, he could get passed on the depth chart. And I feel like it's going to be a really, really important season for him. So I think expect him to be better with ball security in particular, because I'll be honest, if he's not, I don't think he's going to be on this team next year. That's kind of just a hot take for me, that I feel like if those ball security issues are not cleaned up, I'm not really sure how much longer he'll be able to play for this team. And I don't want to make it sound like, oh, he's going to get traded or anything like that, but I think that they have to be, careful with the turnovers, because I think that's a huge thing that can, come back to bite you, that you can have a really good, solid defense that keeps you in games, but if you can't protect the football, you're going to lose a lot of games. So, I think that's just something to monitor. I think just to kind of look at the running back position, because I think historically in a Josh McDaniels offense, they really do like to cycle through a lot of running backs and use a lot of different guys and not just kind of rely on that one, bell cow running back. I think that, McDaniels and that offense, they're going to do a lot to utilize Gibson and Henderson and Larison if he makes the roster. So I think that's definitely something to kind of look at in training camp. But I think otherwise, it's a lot of good positive vibes for this team. I know that there was a lot of change, kind of a culture reset here, but I do think that you have a coaching staff that's experienced, a coaching staff that I think a lot of the players are excited to get to work with. I think that defensive line spot is going to be really, really good. I think with Barmore returning healthy, it makes a world of difference. Milton Williams is going to be great. I think that, Keon White could have a tremendous season. So it's like that's a position group that I think you can be excited about. I also think cornerback is kind of an interesting spot, because I think outside of, Gonzalez, Carlton Davis, and Marcus Jones, I'm kind of not sure about the depth. I like Alex Austin as a player. I like Marcellus Dial, but it's a lot of inexperience in that area. So, I think I don't want to, say this and scare people, but I do feel like if there's an injury in that spot, the Patriots might be a little bit shorthanded. So it'd be interesting to see if, there's a player or two that, makes a jump in training camp, because I think the Patriots might need somebody to do that. So I think the only other Patriot news is they are going to unveil a Tom Brady statue at some point this season, which I think is pretty exciting. So I think it would be the first statue outside of Gillette Stadium. So I think that will be pretty neat to see that they actually are unveiling it on August 8th, which is the day of the Patriots' first preseason game against the Commanders. at Gillette. So that will be something to look forward to if you're a Patriot fan. So I think that's going to do it for the Patriots. We're going to move on. We're going to talk a little bit of Bruins. So they made a trade last week. They also officially introduced Marco Sturm as the new head coach. So, obviously, I think kind of shared a lot of my thoughts last week in terms of, what Marco is going to bring to the team and bring behind the bench. But I think a lot of it's going to depend on the players that the Bruins bring in this offseason. But I do think that'll be interesting to see, how he does. I'm hopeful. I'm excited. But I think obviously it's going to depend on what this offseason looks like, I think, to really, figure out if you're going to be excited about this team or not. So, you hope that free agency rolls around and the Bruins are, doing the best that they can to improve the roster. So, speaking of improving the roster, the Bruins made a trade last week. It was Friday last week that the Bruins made a trade with the Blackhawks, acquiring defenseman Victor Soderstrom in exchange for Ryan Mast and a 2025 seventh round draft pick. So the Bruins here making a trade for Soderstrom, who's a right-handed shot defenseman, played in about 170 games in the AHL, has also played 53 NHL games with Arizona, had spent the last season in the Swedish Hockey League, had 9 goals, 28 assists, and I think was named the best defenseman in that league last season. So Bruins, I think, banking on some kind of potential here, as Soderstrom was a former first round pick, was the 11th overall pick in 2019. So, I think an interesting player a little bit. I think is, yes, 6 feet, 196 pounds, kind of more of a offensive guy, right-handed shot that, I think the Bruins do kind of need a little bit of depth there. I'm not sure if he's a guy that slots right in and would play, third pair minutes right away. But I do feel like it gives them some organizational depth, Mast getting traded, he was a right shot defenseman, but I feel like it was not somebody that seemed like was going to make an impact at the NHL level anytime soon. So I feel like getting someone like Soderstrom makes a lot of sense. NHL experience, former first round pick, and the Bruins kind of just taking a flyer. And I think it makes a lot of sense to take a flyer on a former first round pick, see if he's got anything that can help the team. I do think that the right side of the defense, I think is outside of McAvoy, you kind of don't have a whole lot of depth. Of course, Peak is back there. I really like Peak, but I think he's kind of better served to be kind of a third pair, playing second pair minutes he was able to do at times for the Bruins last season, but I feel like could be a little bit more effective if he didn't have as much on his plate. I don't know if Soderstrom's gonna come right in and play games for the Bruins next season. Who knows? But I do think that it's important to kind of build up that depth because, Wotherspoon's a unrestricted free agent. I'd be surprised if he comes back. Joakim Harju, who the Bruins traded for from Buffalo at the deadline, he's also an unrestricted free agent. So, you have two guys there that I feel like would be surprised if they come back. So I feel like making this kind of trade for a guy like Soderstrom kind of makes sense. I'm not expecting that he's going to come right in and play top 4 minutes and be on the power play, but I do think that it's important to get some depth. I think this is a good trade. I think that you take a risk on somebody, but you're not losing a lot. Mast in a seventh round pick probably isn't going to amount to much. So, I think it's a worthwhile gamble, but I do think obviously Bruins have a lot more work to do. This won't be the only move that they make in the offseason, but I like it. I think it's a solid trade. And I do feel like you could see some trades before the draft. Draft is 10 days away, or 11 days away. It's next Friday. So Bruins certainly, I think, could be in play to move that pick. I think that that's something that Don Sweeney had talked about, that it's potentially, or all options are on the table, that they could keep the pick at number 7, or they could try to move it, whether it's moving it in a trade for an established player, or maybe trying to move up further or move up higher in the first round. So I think that's, all the Bruins stuff that I wanted to get to. There is a bit of Celtics stuff that I wanted to get to, involving the Desmond Bane trade to the Magic yesterday, and I felt like it kind of was a trade that, doesn't directly affect the Celtics, but it was something that kind of gave me a little bit of thought. Desmond Bane, obviously an all-star, going to the Magic for a couple players and a number of first-round picks, and it felt like it was quite a considerable package for a player like Desmond Bane, who is a good player, of course, is an all-star, but it just seemed like it was a lot to give up for somebody like that. And I think it just made me think about Derek White, that it seems like, he and Desmond Bane, not that they're exactly the same player, but they are kind of, elevated role players. And it seems like, if there was an offer out there for something, for somebody like Derek White, the Celtics would be crazy not to listen to it. But I do think that the more that I thought about it, I don't think that there's an offer like that out there for Derek White. And even if there was, I think it's like you have enough with this current Celtics team. I think even if they lose Porzingis and Holiday, Hauser even, you still, I think, have enough on this roster that you can compete in the Eastern Conference. Not be a finals contender necessarily, but it's like Derek White and Jaylen Brown, that right there, I think, is good enough for this team to be, top 6, top 5 seed in the Eastern Conference. And then you think about some of the other role players that, could have more elevated roles, without Jason Tatum. Obviously it'd be interesting to see who gets moved, but I feel like Derek White and Jaylen Brown, that's good enough to get you a pretty good spot in the Eastern Conference. Then you include somebody like Pritchard, some of the other younger guys they have. I don't think it would be that crazy to think that they could compete in the Eastern Conference. And so I feel like they wouldn't make this kind of trade for Derek White because I think they're not trying to punt on this season, that they're still going to try to compete. And I think, Brad Stevens doesn't strike me as the person that's going to kind of tear this all down, so to speak, and start from scratch. So I feel like I expect them to kind of make some good solid moves this offseason so that they can compete enough this season, not necessarily needing to be, number one, number two seed in the East. But I think they can do enough to, be a team that's still, a tough out in a first or second round series. So it just was interesting to think about, if Derek White did get moved for a package like that, all those picks. But then again, it's like you don't know how those picks are going to turn out. So, I feel like my feeling would be you hang on to Derek White, unless you get an unbelievable offer. But I feel like based on the things that we've been hearing the last couple of weeks, that the Celtics are essentially rebuffing any team that's trying to make a deal for Derek White, it kind of makes you feel okay that, okay, the Celtics are not, thinking about moving somebody like Derek, and they're kind of more looking at moving the guys that it kind of makes sense to move. But obviously, I think as we mentioned, the Bruins and their offseason, NBA draft 10 days away, I think the Celtics could be pretty active leading up until then, but definitely after, because obviously they have a couple of picks, decently high picks, late first, early second round pick, and could have the potential to move either of those or move a Porzingis or a Holiday, so definitely could be a a time to make some moves for the Celtics, you know, if they decide to try to move those picks that they have for an established player or possibly try to move up, you know, higher in the draft. So all those things will be interesting to pay attention to. So we're going to take a quick little update on the Revolution. They returned to action over the weekend, losing to Cincinnati 1-0, 26-minute goal, and the Revs' 9-game unbeaten streak was snapped as the Revs lose to second place FC Cincinnati. So I think definitely a game that the Revs looked a little bit lethargic, you know, didn't get a whole lot of great chances in this game, and kind of just, you know, looked like they had been off for a while. Unfortunately, felt like that, you know, break in the schedule kind of, you know, maybe didn't work to their advantage. Revs still 2 points back of a playoff spot in the East. So the lineup did look a little bit different as Ignatius Gannago will miss a couple of matches with an injury. So the Revs, I think, put Luis Diaz in the starting lineup alongside, or forward alongside, Carlos Hill and Tomas Tsahnalai. But I think other than that, the Revs, you know, midfield and back line looked about the same. You know, Ivicic was in there in goal. Obviously, he's been really solid this year. The Revs, I think, it just kind of were, I don't want to say out of sync exactly, but I think anytime you're off for as long a period as they were, kind of made sense that there might be some struggles offensively. But the Revs did, you know, hold a pretty decided advantage in possession, which was kind of the disappointing part. You know, 65 to 35 possession advantage. You know, both teams 3 shots on goal, but it seemed like it kind of took the Revs a bit to kind of get into the game and get the chances. So hopefully the Revs, you know, try to take advantage of being at home for the next couple of games, you know, as we talked about them kind of being on the road for majority of the start of the season. Revs are finally going to enjoy some home games, but they are off for quite a period. They will play again next Wednesday, June 25th, against Nashville. So the Revs will have another long break. So not sure how I feel about that. I feel like to have them continue to play in games to kind of build that momentum, but obviously, with the 9-game unbeaten streak ended, the Revs kind of have to do the best they can to kind of find that next, you know, string of solid play. But okay, let's find another, you know, unbeaten streak that we can go on. So that'll be interesting to see when they open back up against Nashville, June 25th, 7:30 start, and then they will play that following weekend against Colorado, also a 7:30 start. So be a tough one against Nashville as they are third place in the Eastern Conference. So I think that's going to do it for the Revs. Going to take a look at some NBA notes. Obviously, the big trade yesterday, Desmond Bane getting traded to the Magic in exchange for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, I think it was 4 unprotected first-round picks and a pick swap. So a pretty serious haul for the Grizzlies there. The Rockets and Steven Adams agree to a 3-year, $39 million extension. It's being reported that the Knicks are going to talk with Taylor Jenkins, former Grizzlies head coach, and Mike Brown, the former Kings head coach, about their head coaching vacancy. So NBA Finals tonight, Game 5 from Oklahoma City, 8:30 start. Game 5 series is tied 2-2. Got some really good games last week. Game 3 and Game 4 both came down to fourth quarter bursts by both the Pacers and the Thunder, so the Pacers took advantage of the game and or took advantage of the home crowd in game three to take the series lead. But then the Thunder bounced back with a good fourth quarter to tie the series. So game five tonight, do expect an Oklahoma City win in this one. I think that, they're kind of a team that just when it comes down to it, they've been able to get things done in these, high intensity kind of situations. But the Pacers obviously have been unbelievable in close games in the playoffs to this point. So really feel like it's anybody's game, but I do think, the Thunder have proven time and time again in these playoffs that they kind of can get things done when, the series kind of looks to be tough. But I do think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter. But I think I have faith in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder, that home crowd. So I think they take the series lead tonight, but I do expect it to be another close affair in the fourth quarter. So take a look, some notes in the NHL as in the Stanley Cup final, as the Panthers can win back-to-back Stanley Cup titles with a win Tuesday night in Game 6. They took the series lead with a win in Game 5. Brad Marchand, unbelievable again for the Panthers. It's hard to see him do well with that particular team, but just goes to show you that that guy still can get it done and still can, perform at the highest level. So it's been pretty fun to see him do well individually. Hard for me to root for the Panthers, but obviously it'd be very exciting if he can raise the cup. So the Panthers will go for this, will go for back-to-back Stanley Cup titles tomorrow night in Game 6. The Jets, Connor Hellebuyck, last week winning the Vezina Trophy as the top goalie in the NHL, and then also winning the Hart Trophy as MVP. So the first goalie to do that since Carey Price in 2014. Cale Makar won the Norris Trophy for the second time as top defenseman. And Chris Kreider is joining the Ducks after he was traded from the Rangers earlier in the week. So I think that's going to do it for some hockey. We'll get over to some baseball here. The Dodgers are expecting Shohei Ohtani to return to the mound to pitch against the Padres tonight. And we'll take a look at some standings here. It's the Red Sox, thanks to their three-game sweep of the Yankees over the weekend, are now just a half game back of the final wild card spot in the American League and are only 6.5 games out of first place in the AL East. Yankees still lead the division 3.5 games over the Rays. In the Central, the Tigers, running away with the division, have a 9-game lead over the Twins. The Tigers 46 and 27 on the season. Houston in first in the West at 41 and 30. They are 4.5 games up on the Mariners, who the Red Sox visit this week. In the National League in the East, the Mets lead by 2.5 games over the Phillies. Cubs lead by 5.5 in the Central. And the Dodgers atop the West, a 2-game lead over the Giants, who the Red Sox will see later this week. So we'll take a look here at some NFL notes. Trey Hendrickson and the Bengals are resuming contract talks as they hope to get a deal done. The Saints are signing Cam Akers to a 1-year deal after a tryout. And so we will take a look here at some quick WNBA notes. Some three games took place yesterday. Chicago beating the Connecticut Sun 78-66. Angel Reese with her first career triple-double in that game. The Atlanta Dream beating the Washington Mystics 89-56. And then the Phoenix Mercury beating the Aces 76-70. Angel Reese was the second youngest player to ever record a triple-double. Caitlin Clark returned from injury over the weekend to help the Fever hand the Liberty their first loss of the season, as she had 32 points. So, some games next on the schedule. Tuesday night, 7 o'clock on NBA TV, Connecticut and Indiana. Also at 7, Atlanta and New York. And then 8 o'clock, Tuesday games, Washington and Chicago, Golden State and Dallas, Vegas and Minnesota, and then at 10 o'clock on NBA TV, Seattle and LA. So we'll take a look at the standings here. Minnesota atop the entire league at 10-1. New York 9-1. So both teams lead their respective conferences, New York by a game and a half over Atlanta, and then Minnesota 2.5 over Phoenix. So take a look at some PLL scores from over the weekend, and then we'll take a look at the standings. So a couple games on Friday, the Water Dogs beat the Cannons 14-11, and the Archers beat the Redwoods 12-11, and then the Whipsnakes beat the Atlas 16-12, and the Outlaws beat the Water Dogs 9-7. So it's important to note that there were that each week there are two teams that get byes. So I think it was Denver and Carolina that had byes last week. So currently California, there are the Redwoods, the Water Dogs, and the Cannons and the Archers are all 2-1 to lead the standings. So we'll take a look at some games this coming weekend. Saturday at 4, New York plays Philadelphia. Boston will play Maryland. And then Sunday, it will be Utah against Denver. And then Carolina against Maryland. So I think that's how it works. The hosting team each weekend plays two games, and there are two teams that get byes, which is kind of interesting. So I think I would understand that the games will be in Maryland this weekend, so that's why Maryland will play two games. So kind of interesting schedule thing with the PLL, which I find pretty interesting. So obviously, more PLL talk. You could go listen to Guest Friday last week. Really, it was great to have Chris and Sam back on. So I think that is going to do it for the sports. We're going to get to our top five, which actually is sports themed this week, very apropos given the trade yesterday. So this is actually coming as a suggestion from one of our listeners, Matt Frechette. So he had sent me some top five suggestions last week. So one of his suggestions was top five Boston athletes that got traded. So that got me thinking that, at the time, okay, this would be a good top five to do at some point. So I figured today of all days, this would be a day to do it. So, taking a look at this in terms of like, I think attachment to a certain player. So this isn't necessarily, oh, the best players talent-wise that got traded from a Boston team. This is kind of considering everything, I think, in terms of the talent of the player, maybe the emotional attachment, kind of historical significance. I could do a top five later that's like purely, top five athletes that were traded in terms of like their talent level. So trying to consider everything here. So I think for number five, some recency bias for sure, but I think how it kind of feels right now, gonna have the Devers trade at number five. I think just how much of kind of a shock it kind of was. I know that like sure we'll look back at this in a couple of years and maybe think that it was, trending towards this. You may think this now, but I think, obviously it's a significant trade. A guy that won a World Series here is very popular with the fans, and obviously is, a guy that's pretty much close to kind of the top of his ability. I would say that maybe a couple of years ago he was a better player. I'm not trying to say that he's not as good now, hitting wise, because he's amazing as a hitter, one of the best in the American League and the best in Major League Baseball in general. So I think that seems like a good place to start. Number four, Richard Seymour. This might come as a bit of a surprise, but I feel like this is an example of a player, that was really, a solid, important piece to the beginning of the Patriot, or the first couple years, or the first Patriots dynasty, winning the three Super Bowls and being a really, key cog in that defense. And I think it was, one of kind of the first, kind of major trades that, Bill Belichick made in terms of, moving a player that was, popular and was really, important piece of the defense. And this kind of started to, not that this was like the start of these kinds of moves being made, but I felt like this was like the first most significant kind of trade that they move a player that was, still a very good player, still was very solid, helped the team win Super Bowls. And it kind of was like, traded because of a contract dispute, or not dispute, but kind of some contract issues. But I think that was kind of like one of the first kinds of those kinds of trades from the Patriots that was kind of like, oh, okay, this is, kind of an unexpected move. But obviously, the Patriots kind of had a history with making those kinds of trades and them kind of working out. But that was definitely a shock when that happened. So number three, this is another recent one. It's Brad Marchand. I think him getting traded to, the Panthers and seeing him perform as well as he's performed has definitely been tough. And I feel like now it's one of those moves that I feel like was necessary, but doesn't make it any easier. But I think with this team trying to move forward into kind of a new kind of era and rely on some of the younger leaders, I guess, a move like this kind of made sense. And I think, sure, it's quite an emotional attachment that a lot of people, have to this player for, what he meant to the organization, being a captain, winning a championship and all that. So I felt like it was a pretty significant trade in terms of a guy that was part of, a core that won a championship and, was here for so long. So I would say that's a number three for me. I mean, obviously a guy that still can play and still can, be a tremendous asset to, a team that's in the Stanley Cup final. So, that was definitely could had to have that trade in the top five. So number two, this is another one, parting with kind of a franchise legend. I included two players in this, just because they were traded at the same time, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. I think, Paul Pierce meaning so much to the Celtics organization in terms of like coming up as a player, going through the ups and downs, winning a championship and really kind of living what it meant to be a Celtic. So I think that's a trade that I think a lot of us remember for sure, that, it was kind of another kind of end of an era kind of trade that, Paul Pierce kind of did everything he could for the Celtics, and, moving him was kind of a signal that the Celtics were moving, in a different direction. Could probably say the same for Kevin Garnett. Paul Pierce, I think, a little bit more of an emotional attachment just because he had played for the Celtics for a far longer period, but I still think that trade for the net that trade to the Nets was definitely tough to you have to see both guys that meant a lot to the Celtics, win a championship, get moved. So yeah, did include both of them in that trade, or in that or counting them in the top five because they were both moved at the same time. Number one, it's Mookie Betts. I think I had to kind of do both. Had to do two Red Sox ones in the top five. I think just being as recent and kind of just thinking about the trade yesterday. So, Mookie, I think, was probably, in terms of all these guys that got moved, probably was at the best of his ability. Had won a championship, had won an MVP, and it just, one of the, I think, the most shocking moves in Boston sports history. And I think, unfortunately, a move that the Red Sox really haven't recovered from. So I feel like that has to be a pretty clear number one. As far as honorable mentions, Marcus Smart was definitely on here. Somebody that Celtics got close to winning a championship with, but felt necessary that they had to move on to kind of get one of the final pieces that they had to finally get over the top. But definitely an emotional attachment to, Marcus as a player that obviously meant so much to the Celtics organization. Another Celtics one, Kendrick Perkins. That I think was maybe one of the most shocking trades that I, remember from, my time of being a sports fan here in Boston. I think just something that absolutely was the most shocking, the most unexpected move from the Celtics. So that was definitely had to be on there. I also had Nomar on here when he got traded in 2004. Kind of a necessary move at that time, but definitely was hard to stomach. He was a guy that had come up through the Red Sox organization, meant so much to the team, and was a fan favorite, but ultimately, it kind of was something they had to do to try to improve their chances of winning a championship. It's kind of crazy that, like, that 2004 season, that trade for Nomar is basically a footnote because they went on to win the championship, and people kind of forget, all the things that happened there. I also had Rob Gronkowski. I think this was kind of interesting for me because I felt like it wasn't a surprise, really, that the Patriots had dealt him, that it was kind of like the Patriots were trying to move in a different direction, and you kind of didn't know what his health looked like either, and it kind of was like it wasn't like a super shocking move, but I felt like it was a significant trade because it can, signify kind of the end of the Brady Patriots. So felt like that was significant there. Then I have a couple more Bruins ones. I had Joe Thornton. I think just again another really significant trade that, is just interesting to think about in terms of Bruins history. But a guy that had done a lot with the Bruins goes to San Jose, has a great rest of his career, but the Bruins as a franchise, do better a couple years later, win a championship. So that I thought was an interesting one to look at. I also thought the Tyler Seguin trade, another honorable mention. I think a player kind of like Mookie Betts that seemed to be close to the top of his ability, and the Bruins kind of making a really shocking kind of move. So, I think those were some good honorable mentions. So, big shout out to Matt Frechette for giving me the idea for this week's top five. So, I think that's going to do it for me this week. We will be back with you folks next week with a new episode. And be sure to listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and follow along on our social pages on Twitter and Facebook. All right, everyone, have a great rest of your week.